This is the theme music for Cat Radio Cafe.
Oh, yes.
An arts magazine. Live on Wednesday nights at 10. I'm Janet Coleman, the host.
And I'm David Dozer.
The displaced playwright. This program used to be called by another name.
Now introducing
Cat Radio Cafe.
Cat Radio Cafe. Still featuring great interviews with scintillating authors and provocative artistes.
Or vice versa.
The latest in theater, books, art, and performance. What's new on the Rialto and Ludlow Street? And one or two of the 137 Poison Arts Minutes.
Of plays.
Radio minutes that take up to 12 and a half hours to produce.
A marketing idea still ahead of its time.
Listen to this tune. Oh, I can see you cats now.
Hey.
Stop clawing the furniture.
Get down.
Head for the radio. Yes?
Cat Radio Cafe.
Cat Radio Cafe, Wednesday nights at 10, here on WBAI.
Hey, do cats drink coffee?
If it's brewed with fish.
You're tuned to WBAI 99.5 FM. Coming up next, Radio Free Aaron.
Oh, yes, sweet in the morning. Good afternoon and welcome to Radio Free Erin. It's been an eventful week up here at WBAI and for the Pacifica Foundation, but as I say, more on that later. On today's show, you know, we've been covering that Holy Cross School over in Belfast that the kids have been tortured going back and forth from their house to the school. Well, today we're going to have on their principal, Ann Tansey, along with three kids from the school to talk about what's going on. And we're also going to speak with Katie Murphy, who's an elementary school teacher in Fort Worth, Texas. And she's going to have two of her children on that have been writing to the kids in Belfast. Now, either this could be a very good segment, or it could be, huh, who, what? But we'll see how it is. Hopefully the kid, I don't know, maybe. So we're going to give that a shot. So we got five kids, a principal and a teacher. So we should be able to do something with that. And nothing new to Ireland, but an informer was shot dead during the week. And it's an informer that we've discussed about many times on the show, particularly with Ed Maloney, who's a writer for the Sunday Tribune. Ed interviewed this informer about 10 years ago, kept notes, and the British government wanted those notes for a case that Scobie was to testify in. He was shot dead this week by loyalists. And speaking of informers, we'll be talking to Martin Galvin about an American informer still living here in the United States who will be flying over to Ireland to testify in a non-jury trial, and that's the case of Dave Rupert. And we have an update on Dave Rupert's whereabouts and how much he's being paid by the FBI to be an informer. So it's always good to keep tabs on these informers, and that's what we'll be doing. But right now, we head over to Ireland. I'm going to speak to our own Nollaig Ógóra, who'll give us the latest news from Ireland. Nollaig.
Bado yr efo gysbennach sy'n anolwg, gwych, mwchod yr ffad yn ymwawrwch. There is a debate running here at the moment that I'm interested in about the RT authority and people who were on it, but I think the two main stories from the southern side of the border, and I'd let you in the very capable of hands of Ed Maloney about the northern situation, because he was in fact one of the great stars of journalism in this whole murky business of counter-terrorism and underground and MI5 and all the rest of it. In the south, I suppose, the two stories that have been making the headlines is the primetime programme on Thursday night about the 1970 arms crisis and the decision of the Sinn Féin MPs north of the border to avail of the facilities being provided at Westminster while still theoretically abstaining from Westminster. Now, this is an old problem. It goes back to 1905. It goes back to Arthur Griffith's original abstentionism before Sinn Féin became a Republican Party. And it was crystallised in a letter which Rory O'Brodick wrote to the papers in 1997, which, interestingly enough, was only published by the Irish Post in London, and I presume some of the Irish papers in New York, saying that the issue is not the oath of allegiance to the Crown, the issue is the right of British power in Ireland, in other words, British sovereignty in Ireland. They have no particular objections, traditionally, to people taking oaths of loyalty to any individual person. It's what that symbolises, and the claim of the British Crown to be have a right to rule in Ireland. Now, interestingly enough, the Irish President, Mary McAleese, jumped in, rather politically one would think, and stated immediately that now that all this was nearly resolved, it might make possible a visit by a British monarch to Dublin. The British monarch hasn't come to Dublin. Her son has come so far, and they have been in sulks since 1903 because we were bold and broke away, and therefore, while we laid claim to all of Ireland or to Northern Ireland, as they would see it, well, then they weren't going to come and have a full restoration of normal diplomatic relations with Dublin. The other point about it is, of course, that O'Brodick in that letter, which is really worth reprinting, said, of course, that it's something of a repeat of the performance of the De Valera and the Fianna Fáil party in the 1920s, two steps forward, one step back, in terms of taking oath or veering towards Westminster. I'm prepared to put down a bet now towards the end of the year that the next move will not be a change in the British law on this, because it has implications for Scotland and Wales. I think what has happened is that somebody is going to take a case to the European Court of Human Rights or some other international institution of that nature, and that they would be hoping for a finding that would say that the idea of taking an oath to any individual monarch in this day and age, you know, is not acceptable in any of the European countries, be it Denmark or Holland or whatever. And the British will then modify that in conformity with the other one, while retaining the idea of an oath to the Crown as head of the Constitution. In other words, Britain's right to rule in parts of Ireland would be retained, but in fact the idea of loyalty to an individual monarch would be watered down in accordance with a general European practice. And that's going to make some very interesting money and very interesting debates for solicitors and constitutional people and so on. On that also, before we get on to the arms crisis thing, I just want to mention, of course, that we're within 15 days of the euro. And already there's a strike in the junior post offices about changing over to the new coins. You can now buy £5 worth of the new coins in a package and take them home and get used to the feel of them and whatever and so on. It seems to be going successfully, but it does raise the question in particular, of course, of County Donegal, which has only got about 3 miles of land territory with the rest of the eurozone. It is bordered on three sides by the ocean and on the other by Northern Ireland. And, of course, Britain is not joining this great currency experiment. We'll see how it works out over the Christmas period. Now to the arms trial. Basically, the evidence produced by Michael Heaney in this programme on Thursday night, and which apparently has been in the archive here in Ireland for the last 12 months at least, as the state papers have released, was, of course, that there was a cabinet decision to mobilise surplus arms and ammunition, and indeed gas masks, in 1970 to protect the Catholic communities under siege at that time in Belfast, places like Ballymurphy, Ardyne and so on, and that they were moved to Dundalk, and that Jack Lynch and Jim Gibbons knew all about it from the beginning, so that, as Justin Keating said on the programme on Thursday night, and Justin Keating was one of the two members of the Labour Party, which were on the Public Accounts Committee in 1971, which investigated this. We need, he's gobsmacked and he wants to rewrite the whole of the third of the last century of Irish history needs to be rewritten in the light of what's come to light at this stage. Mr. Haughey is saying nothing. Neither is Pádraig Faulkner, who was a member of the Cabinet Subcommittee at the time, who's still alive. Nor indeed is Conor Cruise O'Brien, the other Labour Party member who was on the committee at the time. I suspect there's something of a haste in establishment circles to publish this at this stage because, of course, according to the normal processes, the Committee of Public Accounts reports should come out in the 1971 papers, which are due on the 1st of January. And hopefully, if we're alive, we'll be reporting in those within a week or a fortnight in Dublin at the beginning of January of next year. I just want to say one other thing, that Dr. Patrick Hillary, the Foreign Affairs Minister at the time, then known as External Affairs, did issue a statement but didn't go on camera, saying that he wasn't at all the meetings. And it was confirmed to me tonight from a very impeccable source that, in fact, Mr. Haughey was not at the meeting on the crucial 6th of February 1970 where the decision was taken to proceed along these lines as government policy. So there's an element of confusion, lackadaisical, people not really taking the matter seriously in Dublin in that fateful year. But of course, Jack Lynch is the person who emerges with the least credit out of all this. And indeed, all our worst fears of Jack Lynch as a responsible leader, as the late Kevin Boland used to always say, either he knew, in which case he told lies, or he didn't know, in which case he should know, because he was a Taoiseach. I think it's an area that's going to be revisited again and again. And from my own instincts and from what I know from 1970, it appears to me that, you know, the thing is being finally ironed out according to what the reality was. And I think the reality was that diplomatically they realised that any such attempt by an Irish government next door to Britain would be totally in contrary to United Nations practice. They realised that Britain had a veto in the Security Council of the United Nations, and therefore there was an attempt to play a little bit here and a little bit there, and to deny it diplomatically to London if London raised the issue. But it is also of interest that Dr. Hillary, apparently, in some of these papers, did warn the British government that they could not stand by, not idly by, if this thing proceeded in the north. And of course, as we all know, in the years that followed, in fact, effectively, the Irish government did stand by, and indeed some would argue that they did collaborate with the British authorities in putting down the revolt of the Catholic minority within the six-county area. I'll throw out one other word before this. There's one Christmas programme, but one to you, and that is you, some of you who may be old enough to remember the Little John affair, where we found out that the secretary to the head of the special branch in Dublin at the time was in fact a British spy. And these guys were given back without even a debriefing in return for other people, the Little Johns at the time, by the then Minister for Justice, Desmond O'Malley. I also understand that Mr. O'Malley is going to persist in his version of events in the Sunday Independent tomorrow. You may recall that when Mr. Lynch died 2 years ago, Mr. O'Nally, who is now the leader or was the founding member of the Progressive Democratic Party, gave the oration rather than even any Fianna Fáil leader.
Noel, thank you. We got a full board here today because we're heading over to Belfast to speak with those kids from Holy Cross School.
Talk to you next week.
Okay, thank
God
you. And that was Noel Gregor. We're going to go to a little music here. When we come back, we'll be in Fort Worth, Texas, and in Belfast.
Back to Radio Free Erin. We're going to Belfast to speak to Anne Tanney, who's the principal of Holy Cross Girls' School. Anne, thanks for being with us.
Thank you. Thank you for inviting me.
And just for our listeners who may not know, who haven't been, the pupils at Holy Cross Girls' School went through 3 months of hell with loyalist so-called protesters throwing every urine, blast bombs, everything imaginable, calling them every filthy name in the book. Fortunately, they've now come through it, and you're working with them to help them get past that.
yes, we are working very hard to try and get over all that has happened, really. One of the things that has helped us are all the cards and all the good wishes and all the prayers from people in America. We had a lovely letter from Senator Hillary Clinton. We had a rag doll sent to us from Tallahassee, which gave me the idea of buying the children rag dolls because some of them weren't sleeping at night, so that they could take the doll to bed with them. So we bought 250 rag dolls, and that idea came from really Tallahassee. And we also have books sent to us and people visiting and gifts, and we're very grateful to everybody for supporting us through all of this.
And, of course, there was a concert recently here.
And, of course, yes, there was a concert recently, and we got money from that. And we're bringing the children to two pantomimes at Christmas, one before Christmas and one after Christmas. And it'll be a free pantomime, and we have the buses paid for and the pantomime tickets paid for. And all these special treats are for them at Christmas to try and make them realize that there are lots of people who care about them and who are very sorry about what was happening.
And why don't you have three of your pupils with us.
Yes, I have.
Why don't you introduce at least the first of them?
Okay. This is Nicola McCann. And Nicola will say hello to you here. Hold on.
This is Nicola McCann.
Hello.
Nicola, this is Radio Free Aaron in New York. Thank you for being with us.
Okay.
So, are you glad it's all over over there? Are you glad those nasty people aren't there anymore?
Well, I'm quite glad that it's over because it was very scary and frightening to start when it was on, and I'm glad that it's over.
Nicola, I don't know if you know, some girls in Texas were writing to you.
Yes, we've got the letters and we're very pleased to have them because we know they've been thinking about us.
Nicola, how old are you?
I'm 11.
Do you understand why these people were doing this to you?
No, because I don't know why, because we've never done anything bad on them.
Nicola, how did it make you feel when you had to walk to school through all that?
Well, I was very scared and I was very frightened. I don't think I could have done it alone, and I was glad that I had my mummy by my side, because I was just so frightened, and I was so scared to go to school.
Was your mother afraid?
Yes, my mummy was too, because the mummies and the daddies, everyone was frightened every day trying to walk up to it.
And Nicola, I think you have two of your schoolmates there with you.
Yes.
Would you introduce the next?
Yes, the next one's Colonel Kane, and he says here.
Hello.
Hello.
Hi. Thanks for being with us. How are you doing?
Okay.
Yeah. So, are you looking forward to going to the pantomime?
Can't wait.
And I hear you got a rag doll.
Yeah.
Did you like that?
Yeah, I thought it was lovely.
And did it help that you knew that people in America were writing to you and thinking about you?
Yeah, I thought it was very thoughtful of them to know that the Jews were thinking about us.
And how old are you?
I'm 10.
You're 10. And you're going to have a good Christmas?
Yeah.
Kira, did you ever think that this was going to end?
No, I didn't really think that it was going to end because there were really mean to us and stuff.
And I'm going to ask of all the kids here, do you understand why they were yelling at you?
No, I had no idea why they were doing it to us.
Is there a possibility that they might do it again, or is it over, hopefully?
I think it's over, because there's hardly any of the night and shouting and screaming at us.
Yeah. Listen, what do you and your friends talk about when you're in school or in the playground? Do you talk about what the people were saying to you and yelling at you?
No, we just try and forget about it. Just get on like a normal school day, so would I.
So it's better not to talk about it and just pretend that it's just over and that's it.
Yeah.
All right, could you introduce now the next student?
This is Shannon. Hello?
Hello, Shannon. Shannon?
Yes?
Hi, Shannon. This is Radio Free Aaron in New York. We're very glad you could come on.
Thank you.
So, how did it make you feel when those people were yelling at you and screaming at you and throwing things at you?
Well, I felt very scared, but then I knew that my mommy would take care of me.
And how old are you, Shannon?
9.
And what grade are you in?
K-6.
Yeah, Shannon, are you and all your friends ready for Christmas?
Yeah.
Yeah, what are you going to do this Christmas?
Well, I'm going to go down to my granny's house and have Christmas with my family.
And I hear you're going to the pantomime.
Yeah.
Have you ever been before?
Yeah, I've been there, so I have.
Are you looking forward to it?
Yep.
Shannon, I asked the other two students, do you have any idea why all those people were yelling at you when you were going to school?
No, I don't have any idea, but they're just blaming it on us, whatever their anger is inside them.
Did you go to school the day they threw the blast bomb at you?
Yeah.
And did you know what happened when the bomb went off?
No, I just ran up towards the school, so then we went into school and it was safe.
And was your mother running with you?
Yep.
Well, right now we're going to go down to Texas. An elementary school in Fort Worth, Texas, took up the cause of the kids in Holy Cross and Belfast and started writing to them and doing things for them. With us on the line is their teacher, Katie Murphy. Katie, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Yeah. Katie, maybe quickly explain, what did you have your class do for the kids at Holy Cross?
Well, when we first found out about it, the kids all made cards and sent to them. And they also wrote letters to President Bush, and they made up a petition for President Bush and Prime Minister Tony Blair and got signatures, and we sent those off.
You want Tony the teacher?
Listen, Katie, I don't know how you want to do this. You want to introduce the three kids first, and then we'll have one of them read the letters on each side, have a kid read it from Belfast and a kid from Texas?
Okay. I have the letter that they sent to President Bush, and then I also have a letter that they sent there. Which one would you rather they read?
Bush has got enough attention lately. The one that went over to Belfast.
Okay, that would be good. Okay, I have with me today Cynthia Soto, Jennifer Torres, and Luz Tafoya.
But most of your students are Tex-Mex, are they?
Yes, that's correct. They're all Hispanic. Quite a few of them are immigrants from Mexico.
Hello?
Yes.
Hello, this is Anne. Anne Tani again.
Yeah, Anne, if you could just hang on. We're going to have one of the kids read a letter that was sent over to you.
Okay. Some of the guys here have got the letters from Texas. They were talking about them earlier on.
Okay, you know what? Listen, see which letter they read in Texas. Then you have one of the kids read another letter.
The only thing is we don't have a letter. You see, this is Saturday night, and I'm here at my house, so we don't have the letters with us.
Oh, okay, so we'll have the kids in Texas read it then.
Okay, well, I just listen to myself here.
Yeah, you can just hang on and listen. So,
okay.
Katie, if you can have one of them read the letter.
Katie's going to have one of them read. Okay.
Okay, the first one is Cynthia. This is Cynthia.
Cynthia.
Hello.
Hey, Cynthia, I'm going to let you speak to Nicola here, and you can read your letter. I know they got your letters, but we don't have them with us just at the moment. Would you like to read it to Nicola?
Yes.
Yeah, put Nicola on.
Pardon? Yes.
Put Nicola on, and we'll have Cynthia read to
her. Your letter.
Dear friend,
hello.
My name is Cynthia. I live in Fort Worth, Texas. I am 8 years old, and I have one brother and one sister. I am the littlest in my family. My school name is Sam Rosen Elementary. My favorite color is blue and red. What is yours? I don't write pretty as much. I'm in third grade. My favorite animal is a guinea pig. What is your favorite animal or pet? My favorite food is pizza. What is your favorite meal? I hope we get to be big pals. Do you like sports? I like sports. My favorite sport is soccer. Oh, well, I hope you write back. Sincerely, your friend Cynthia Elizabeth Soto.
Okay. Thank you. That was lovely.
Cynthia, what did you think was going on in Belfast? Did you understand what was going on?
Yes.
What do you think was going on there? What did you hear?
There was fighting against the Protestant and Catholic.
And did you see it on TV, or did the teacher read it to you?
The teacher read it to me.
And did all the kids in the class talk about it?
Yes.
Listen, could you put Jennifer on now?
Yes.
For Jennifer to come on here from Texas, and she'll be on, I guess, with Nicola.
Hello, I'm Jennifer.
Hello, Jennifer. Do you have a letter?
Yes.
Okay, let it go. The kids in Belfast are listening to you.
Dear friends, hello. My name is Jennifer Torres. I hope we have something in common so we will be alike. My favorite color is baby blue. I live in Fort Worth, Texas. I live with my family. These people are my two baby sisters, my mom, my dad, my three uncles and my two aunts, and my grandparents. I used to have a baby brother called Carlos Torres, but he died. I live in a baby blue and white house. You might have guessed what. I go to school here in San Rosa Elementary. I am 8 years old. I am in third grade. I wonder how old are you. I hope you're kind of my age. Next time, send me a card telling me all the things I told you. Sincerely, your friend, Jennifer Torres.
Jennifer, I think I did get that letter. I got that letter.
Yes, it's good. I'm glad.
All right.